I would like to do a book report right now on the latest book I have read. It usually takes me a while to get through books. This one, it took me an extra while because I feel like this one was... It was like The Wire. Like the initial viewing of The Wire where...
You missed a lot.
They introduce a ton of different characters, and then you have to then try to follow the threads of all these characters. And they're not famous names that you know very well, so then you have to kind of go back. Who are you talking about? What kind of French name were you talking about that I got to make sure? Is he a... Anyway, the book is called The Guns of August. And I have a lot of books. I... Will, it's been my thing I've told you about for years. It's hard to buy for me at Christmas. Like, if I want something, I genuinely will get it. And I think a lot of people are in this boat, you know. So what I do is I keep a book list every year, and I give that to my wife. And maybe even sometimes I just go order some of them myself. But the point is, I'll hear... Maybe you'll be talking and say, oh, I read this really good book, or I'll hear on a podcast about this really good book, or I'll read in a book about another book. It's weird. And I heard this one is the best book out there anywhere ever written on World War I. And I was like, okay, I have some interest in that. One summer, I slogged through the World War I podcast by Dan
Carlin.
Thinking Harmon. Who's Harmon?
Dan Harmon would be the
creator of Rick and Morty, right?
Yes.
Okay, Dan Carlin. Well, he's got a podcast, and it's about 20 hours of listening, if you want to take that in. And it's fascinating, but it's about the entirety of World War I. And I'll bet you there's no doubt he references this book in his podcast, because basically he just reads a ton of books, and then he does a podcast. He filters all the information for you. And this is by Barbara Tuchman. Could be Tuchman, but it's T-U-C-H-M-A-N. It's called The Guns of August. And it's actually just about the first month of World War I. Because I guess then it kind of settles in to trench warfare for another 4 years.
Jeez.
But this would be the last war that started... thinking that they could have men riding on horses, you know, actually fight. Because the technology just got to such a point where, how about if I just get a machine gun, and now I'm one man, and I can mow down these 20 men rushing towards me with their swords on horses. This was the first war that featured that. And very little of this book touches on that at all. It's all about the machinations that get this war going in the first place. And I know an arm's length about it, even though I listened to Dan Carlin's podcast years ago. But I always thought it was all because of this...
the Archduke.
This guy who was assassinated, but then... I think he was Austria, but then so that made their ally, which was Germany, upset with the country of the guy who assassinated him, and then but then their ally was France, and it all spiraled out of control until all of a sudden everybody with their allies was all in a trench, just firing big giant, you know, metal things at each other that would blow up. It's so much more than that, but what to me was really fascinating was, I guess it's a part, you know, it's as far as the era and the fact that it's before, you know, right about when weapons were becoming really destructive. But what's really fascinating to me was reading about how all these countries had things set up and the tensions that brewed behind the scenes. Like, this war would have happened whether that guy got assassinated or not. Germany and France were going to go at it at some point. What was going to be the reason? That all depends.
Yeah.
it was going to happen, though. France knew it. For years, they had been preparing. I guess they had a big loss in a previous battle or a previous war, and that was stewing with them. And they had seen some problems that they had back then, and they decided it was the Cowboys who were going to start drafting an offensive line. They thought all their problems in the past stemmed from being too defensive. They were going to be an offensive machine, and that's it. And so anything they did, it had to have that in it. And that had them run into some early war problems, or else they might have done a lot better in this war. Although they won in the end, but it might not have taken so long. Germany really had it in for France and would use any little slight. To me, it's reading about it is like reading about different football teams in the NFL. And when I think about it, maybe sports has replaced a lot of the, you know, we can still have our pride in our countries without like a million people having to die
sure.
at the end of it just to prove who is right. And you look at these countries, we've talked about this many times before here in the Dumb Zone, the size. I mean, Germany, who started a world war. And Norm Macdonald has a funny bit on they did it twice. They just challenged the entire world. Germany is half the size of Texas.
Yeah.
So, and it's one of the larger countries there, Russia notwithstanding, right? But so, you know, France is around the same size. England is smaller. So these are tiny, these are not giant places that are attacking each other, yet they're ready to take everyone on. And it's just pretty fascinating just reading the behind the scenes. One thing that I read, I wanted to bring a piece of audio because this also tells me. Oh, I want to say this about this book. And maybe this is why I bought it in the first place and ended up reading it. I don't know how I happened upon this. But they say that John F. Kennedy was so impressed by this book that he gave copies of it to his cabinet and military advisors. He demanded that they read it. And that this was a big deal as far as what he chose to do in the Cuban Missile Crisis. Because he realized how little things could end up being such a big thing if you got too far into it. And even in this... So, I don't want to blow-by-blow bore you with what led to the four-year-long standoff, but it also could have been done much sooner if Germany didn't march through Belgium to get to France. They didn't have to. They could have gone around it, but they went right through it because they thought that would be the key to their victory if we got the north of France and got to Paris. So they violated a treaty with Belgium. But because of that, and because of the atrocities that they committed there, apparently burned some historic libraries that had, you know, some things from the, you know, 1200s in it, but they burned it down. Because of that, France and the rest of the world, or their allies, had there's no bargaining policy. So the reason it went 4 years, like Germany wanted out. They're like, no, total victory is the only...
That ship has sailed.
Yeah. So little things like that. The piece of audio that I connected with, let me see if I can find this, has to do with, so you know, another thing, I don't know how I ever read without my phone next to me. Because I'm reading.
You gotta look stuff up.
And you gotta look up a word or look something else up. So here we're talking about Germany marching between Brussels and Paris on August 28th. And this thing just started in August. So this is all about the first month, which what led them just to the little standoff that they were in for 4 years. Little standoff.
Little kerfuffle.
They thought they had this in the bag. Now they're just going for a cleanup. They thought, we have marched this far. We keep pushing the French back. We're now just going, it's just a matter of time. We're just finishing this thing off now. That night, by the fire, light of fires, the regimental bands played the victory song. I can't read this. Heil Dir im Siegeskranz. And as one of Kluck's officers wrote in his diary, the sound was taken up by thousands of voices. By the way, the retrospect on Kluck's mistakes. Joffre was the leader of the French army. His egregious mistakes early on. They look so obvious when you look at it later. Like, of course you couldn't have done that. But that's a lot of fun. But that's exactly like what we do on Monday.
Yeah.
With the Cowboys. Or 2 years later, when you look back at the Cowboys season and Zeke and the... Of course. No one would have said they would make the playoffs. Well, we all did at that time. But that song, so I got to thinking, what is that song? It's not this song, which they also referenced, and I searched. Like, what is that song that they're referencing? You know this one. This is like the French, whatever. So they would, music was a big part of it too. They would have bands play behind certain battles to pump you up.
That's awesome.
To, like, they wouldn't want you just, if you were dying, you've been marching for weeks, you haven't had your food and supply lines have been cut off.
You got trench
foot. You haven't shaved, you have trench foot. Well, trench foot would come later.
Okay.
This is the first month you didn't get trench foot. You were just marching. But you're starving, all that kind of stuff. Let's just get the local band from the closest town would come and play some French songs and would kind of fire them up, pump them up, and that would help the fighting, they would say. But this was the German song. And this made me mad when I heard that this was one of the German victory songs that they were playing. We just stole it. Don't you know what this is?
Yeah.
We stole My Country 'Tis of Thee. Was a German... pump-up song.
How have I never known this?
Was a German pump-up song in World War I. From every mountainside,
let freedom ring. Man, that's spare. That's really spare. How have I...
it's a Beatles cover song. That's all it is. You did a cover song.
Couldn't even like...
For the great song, one of our...
Couldn't even do like a sample flip.
One of our glorious songs in American history. I grew up singing that, thinking this makes me swell with pride. And now it turns out...
I had no idea.
That it came from Germany.
Just change a couple words.
Great book. It'll take some time to read it, I think, unless you are a little smarter than me, which is probably 99% of the people listening. So it's called The Guns of August by Barbara Tuchman. If you're into that kind of thing, maybe you're not. I don't know. You don't have to do everything I say. Not your dad. All right. Jake's been teasing this all day, and you finally get to do it, Jake. We're going to talk about your Rangers next.